When a particle moves, it has a track or path, there is distance involved, and also speed or rate of movement. Suppose you have a pointer of some kind which is switched back and forth across a dial, say a 1 foot, 1 way movement in 1 second. Cut the 1 foot motion down to 6 inches without changing speed. The pointer will then cover the same distance in the same time, but it will pass over a 6-inch space twice, instead of over the 12-inch space once. It will have a beat or frequency of 2, as a result of shortening its path. Now when we compress the cube of lead, we may conceive that the paths or tracks of the motion of its particles are shortened in some way. Their speed is not changed, but their frequency of vibration rate is increased. The lead remains lead, but the electrons and nuclei of the atom are a trifle closer together. If we kept the cube in its original size but pressed more lead into it, the effect would be the same. The density would be increased, and so would be its mass and weight. We have used the word speed, and properly speaking, this means rate of motion in any direction. Speed is measured on a scale and has magnitude only, but velocity has both magnitude and direction, a vector quantity. If we change either speed or direction, we get a change of velocity. These are questions of correct mathematical usage, but all we are trying to do here is a little crude picture, thinking, to see how the density of matter is related to the speed or velocity or vibration rate of its particles. Density is the quantity of matter per unit volume. Increased density and increased speed of the atomic particles go together. Mass increases with velocity and with decrease in size. Our ultra-microscopic lead cube has an enormous mass, a very small size, and a very high velocity of its particles, and a high density. These characteristics will make it penetrative, so that it will go through the cork or any less dense matter like wind through a wire mesh. The lower end of the spectrum of tangibility. It should be clear by this time, that if we take any substance, any object, and make it extremely dense, we decrease its volume until we cannot see it or touch it. At a certain density, we reach the lower end of the spectrum of tangibility and of seeable colors. We spoke on a previous page of the fact that the so-called dense matter of our world is really a rarefaction, a kind of thinning out of some kind of very dense stuff called space, or the ethers. But when we talk about compressing a cubic inch of lead down to a size where it is invisible, we seem to be offending common sense again. Even if the lead is a rarefaction, you may say, it can hardly be as tenuous and rarefied as all that. But let us look at this in the light of scientific facts. Suppose an atom to be so enormously enlarged, with all of the distances kept in proportion, so that the orbit of the electron, if it has an orbit, has a diameter equal to that of the Earth about the Sun, say 184 million miles. On that scale, the diameter of the electron itself will be only 2,000 miles, and the diameter of the nucleus, where mass and weight chiefly lie, can be taken as 2 miles only. A central mass 2 miles thick, another object 2,000 miles thick at a distance of some 92 million miles. Evidently, plenty of room inside this system. And what do we mean by room? We do not mean nothingness, but space, and space is not nothing. It is identifiable with the ethers, and the ether is matter of extreme density. It is so dense that we cannot see or feel it, and its friction as it flows through the kind of matter we do see and touch is so minute that our instruments have not yet detected it with certainty. In this dense matter, inside the system of any atom or congregation of atoms of our world, there may be other worlds, and worlds within these also dash world without end. The physicist will say that for him the centers of the atoms, the nuclei, seldom approach each other much closer than 1 angstrom, which is 100 millionth of a centimeter. A negative electron has a diameter of about 35 millionths of an inch, so that it would take about 30,000 electrons, touching each other, to measure 1 angstrom and reach from one nucleus to another. Consider the comparative vastness of the space which separates, and unites the parts of the atom. It was to illustrate this that we magnified the atom mathematically in the last paragraph. How many other atoms may lurk unseen in these huge, stellar inter, spaces. We spoke of the nucleus of the atom as holding nearly all of its mass and weight. The lightest atom is hydrogen, and its mass is nearly 1840 times that of a negative electron. But it is not larger in volume, let us take good note of that. The larger the mass, the smaller the diameter is axiomatic in present-day science. The negative electron has the greatest volume of any individual body in the atom. If the distance from center to center of nearest atoms is, say, 2 angstroms, writes Grijor in Atomic Theory, 1942, and if the negative electron is of the order of 10 carat, 13, or 1 over 10 plus 13 ciphers, the volumes are to each other as the cubes of these figures, or 10^15, 10 plus 15 ciphers. That is to say, the volume of the atom is 10^15 times as much as the volume of one single negative electron. A diamond is a very dense substance, 3.55 times as dense as water. Suppose we could put such pressure on a diamond that it was crowded into a density equal to that attributed to the star Wolf 457, or to 500 million times the density of water. World, by the way, has a mass some 60 times that of our sun but is only about half the size of our moon, some 3,000 miles in diameter. The greater the mass, the smaller the diameter. Well, a cubic inch of our condensed diamond, or of the star mentioned, would weigh about 9,000 tons on our Earth. Yet the nuclei of its atoms would still be distant from each other, from 10 carat, 10 to 10 carat, 11 centimeters. This means that the distance between the nuclei of its atoms would still be between 10 and 100 times the diameter of the atom itself. Do we still think that our cubic inch of lead is already highly condensed, too dense to be compressed very much? Or that there is no room inside it, inside the systems of its atoms? The land of Etheria. This is the land of Etheria, Eden, land and the homeland of our race. Theosophical writers have used a helpful illustration. Fill a large bucket with large stones, then with small stones, pebbles and gravel thrown in also. Add sand to the brimful, then you can still add water in considerable amounts. All of these things, in a sense, and if by space you mean the size and shape of the bucket, are in the same space. So if our world be a sand grain, note how many other worlds great and small may be in the cosmic container along with it. Not a very accurate illustration, of course. Things do not really occupy the same place, it is only that the enormous places we call empty are all filled up. Forget about the atoms for a moment and look about you in common, three-dimensional space. How much of it is filled, even to our sense perceptions? Do you really think that there is nothing between you and the wall yonder, or the tree, the city, the mountains in the distance, the height of the sky overhead? Does the idea of nothingness make any sense, if indeed one can have such an idea at all? No philosopher has ever made profit from such a concept. Out of the void we read, this or that issued forth, but again, ex nihilo nihil fit, and from nothing no thing was ever born. Even the scientists, wary of picture, thinking, were graveled by this difficulty. Actio in distance, they used to call it, or the problem of action at a distance. Magnetism, an etheric phenomena. Hold a magnet over a nail and a miracle occurs. The nail jumps as if prodded by demons, yet nothing seems to connect the two. Well then, reasons the experimenter, we shall have to invent something to connect them. Just as, if there were no God, man would need to invent one. We shall invent, or rather postulate, the ether. A postulate, if you please, is a necessary assumption. Lines of force, stresses, a magnetic field, all make it necessary to assume a space, filling medium. And this cosmic filler, in, or postulate, or ether, was for a long time an immense convenience, also an immense embarrassment. It was necessary and it was inconsistent, matter and non-matter, stuff and not stuff. Came Einstein, came the dawn, or did it? And a great sense of liberation with him. Mathematically speaking, the ether was no longer necessary, we can use the concept of space instead. That shut one Pandora box, even while it opened another one. If the mathematicians are relieved, philosophers and metaphysicians have hardly shifted their ground. One curious fact came to light in connection with the development of Einstein's equations. The mass of a body, the quantity of matter in it, increases with velocity, when the velocity approaches that of light. Mass therefore is a function of velocity. If volume remains constant, and the velocity and hence the mass be increased, the density, or quantity of matter per unit volume, is also increased. This obviously restates much of what we have said about the nature of density and of the etheric worlds. One curious fact came to light in connection with the development of Einstein's equations. The mass of a body, the quantity of matter in it, increases with velocity, when the velocity approaches that of light. Mass therefore is a function of velocity. If volume remains constant, and the velocity and hence the mass be increased, the density, or quantity of matter per unit volume, is also increased. This obviously restates much of what we have said about the nature of density and of the etheric worlds. But to go back to the nothingness which lies between you and the mountain yonder, or between your eye and your outstretched hand, as if nothing could lie anywhere. With such a concept, or alleged concept, you cannot think at all. You merely cease thinking and utter certain verbal sounds. Rosicrucians have a phrase for it: space is the unperceived aspect of reality. More basically still, it is a form or aspect or condition of consciousness which attends on experience. We must refuse this inviting by path, which would lead us as far the galaxies at least, and humbly invite you to sit down and look at space for a few minutes, even if you can't see it. Stop looking through it at the thing beyond, and try looking into it instead. If you practice this a bit, you'll begin to see the graining of it, something like heat waves but not in motion. That is said to be the aura, and maybe it is, but it's a profitable hint. If you kept on looking, conditioning your eyes, you might learn to see many things in this nothingness, maybe even an Aetherian friend or two occasionally, or marvelous cities builded in the blue as do the Hindus ears. But don't make the mistake of telling psychiatrists, medical men and psychologists about this. You have three guesses why. Since, to repeat, this booklet is issued in what we conceive to be the public interest, it is important to avoid the appearance of serving any particular creed or cult or school or other organization. We are dealing with an intensely practical and factual situation, middle dot the visitation of the ether craft, flying saucers, and with problems arising from it. The writer and his associates believe they have an explanation of these craft which is basically correct, and it is their hope that it will be examined in the light of all available data, and also from a rigidly scientific point of view. They have used information from every possible source, and some of these sources would doubtless be discredited a priori by many readers. No one, however, is asked to respect such sources, or any alleged authority, per se, but only to listen critically to what is said if his interest is sufficient, and thereafter to form his own opinion. Those who wish a simple statement of the main issues involving the disc problem will perhaps find all they care for in section I of this booklet. Those who care to go a little further into the scientific concepts will find them sketched in section 2. But it is almost certain that these ether craft were known in antiquity, and that at least a few persons of unusual training or gifts have always understood their origin and purposes. And it is entirely certain, and a familiar fact, that the ancients knew a good deal about etheria, that is, about the etheric planes or worlds. Whether the reader has any interest or confidence in this lore, is his own business. But from our point of view, all data, real or alleged, about etheria is pertinent and contributory, and we believe a good many people are interested in it. We therefore devote a few paragraphs in this section 3 to this topic. In doing this, we shall simply quote excerpts from a booklet previously issued, The Mystery of the Flying Discs, Meglane, BSRA, June 1948 inches, without attempting to organize the material. The whole of this present booklet, in fact, has been compiled under difficulties and makes no pretense at skillful presentation. The quotations follow. You ask, if this improbability theory really exists, how is it that we do not know about it? Well, it has been known, in varying degrees, to adepts and initiates and occultists for thousands of years. It is like scores of other facts of great importance, the commons have never understood nor really wanted to understand. There has always been a store of secret knowledge in the world. In fact, all advanced technical knowledge is secret in a sense, to all except the few who can understand and apply it. Of course, Ethereum is incredible. It happens to be a new fact, a new light on the horizon so far as common knowledge is concerned. X, rays and radar and the radio and atomic fission and a score or a hundred more are incredible new facts also, yet it is likely they were known in old time. But if incredible and impossible mean the same to you, we are wasting your time. For those interested in what is called occult or esoteric ideas and philosophy, the subject of Etheria is familiar. The various schools employ varying terminology and different classifications of the planes and worlds, but their basic concepts are very similar as far back as we have any information about them. Perhaps the most familiar classification of the ethers is four-fold, and includes their 1. Chemical ether, 2. The life ether, 3. The reflecting ether. These appear to be different aspects of the etheric world, and it is through them that all the forces of life flow into the organic forms of plants, animals, and men. Ancorius' translation of ancient fragments quotes one of the Chaldean oracles as saying, "From the ether have came all things, and to it all things return, the images of all things are impressed upon it, it is the storehouse of the germs or remains of all visible forms and even of ideas." H. P. Blavatsky writes in Isis Unveiled, Volume I, page 284, "The universal ether, in the eyes of the ancients, was a boundless ocean peopled like our familiar seas with creatures large and small, and having the germs of life in every molecule. Here too dwelt the various races of elemental spirits." Page 310, "The privation of a form, that is, its abstract idea, when transmitted to the ether, becomes material." References to this topic of the ethers, however, in Isis Unveiled and The Secret Doctrine appear to be very few to clarify for the reader the ideas presented in the preceding paragraph. Heindel's Cosmo Conception can be obtained from the Rosicrucian Fellowship, Oceanside, California, $3.50. The following material on the etheric hypothesis, a 1-page mimeo sheet, was issued by Mr. Lane some time after the publication of the Ethership Mystery and its Solution. I believe the idea of the interlocking circles as a diagram of the interrelationship of astral, etheric, and physical planes, and the comment on it, came from a member of Inner Circle, one of the controls who work through trance, medium Mark Probert. The etheric hypothesis, the phenomena of the flying saucers, flying discs, and other strange sky craft have only one explanation. This unfortunately will be no explanation at all to those who are unable to understand the terms which must be used, or who reject the methods of psychic investigation which must be employed. But for the assistance of all who are understanding and tolerant in such matters, the investigators of the BSRA group have obtained the following diagram and comments, the interpenetration of the planes. Physically considered, these planes are distinguished by varying rates of vibration. Spiritually considered, they are varying states of consciousness. Substance as earth men know it takes on the tangibility suited to earth consciousness on the lower etheric, and it is from this region that your sky phenomena burst into view, and also your physical psychic phenomena. At death, man's sojourn in the lower etheric is very shorted. But he does not enter the higher etheric, but goes right on through it, with no consciousness of it, to the lower astral. Later, and depending on his mental activity, he enters the higher spheres of the astral. But in order to make any contact other than mental, he must make it through and by the lower etheric. The reader should observe the extent to which the sphere or plane of the physical world is interpenetrated by the etheric regions. All material existence of our plane issue from the etheric and become materialized for our senses. And when a human being reincarnates, he must enter the lower etheric levels of matter in order to do so, thus obeying the common law. Etheric matter, like the matter of the still higher levels, is susceptible of being molded by the energy, action of thought. Dwellers on the etheric construct, dwellings, houses, sky, craft by thinking out the pattern, and drawing into it the heavier particles of matter. All objects of our world have been created in this way, by man himself. Now to continue with the original Aethership mystery text. Concerning the lokas. As we have pointed out elsewhere, these sky phenomena have a great many forms, and the word disk describes only one type of them. A generic name covering all the shapes or types has long been needed, and the BSRA publications, several years ago, proposed the word loka, or lokas. Whether or not this term can be acclimatized, it brings up the loka idea or concept as it exists in Oriental philosophy. It is worthwhile saying a few words about this because etheria, the etheric worlds or planes, and the lokas are to a considerable extent identifiable. It may be helpful to some of us, if we clearly understand that etheria, and the ether, ships, and etherian peoples are not new knowledge in the world, but have been known for thousands of years. They are merely new to us because of our ignorance. The word loco itself is originally no more than the Latin locus, a place. Adivaloco is the place of the devas, and kamaloco is the place of karma or desire. In theosophical usage it is about equivalent to world or sphere or plane. Another word, dala, is inseparably connected with loka, and may be understood as the material aspect of the latter. In occult thinking, every plane has an inner and an outer aspect. Here on Earth, for example, we have a type or form of consciousness which functions in a certain way, and also the matter or substance or kind of manifestation with which this form of consciousness can deal. This corresponds to the terms subjective and objective and roughly to the distinction between loka and tala also. The two aspects are as inseparable as the two poles of a magnet. And it is customary in exoteric philosophy to refer to the lokas or loka, talas as being seven in number. These are often thought of as spheres concentric with our globe. The first was said to extend to the upper limits of our atmosphere. The second as far as the pole star and including the planets. The etheric worlds or lokas are regarded as spatial and temporal regions of existence which interpenetrate with our world of, more aerified, matter, and also, in their higher aspects, with the lower levels of the astral. Our physical plane includes the lower and higher etheric, but some 4/5 of this lies outside our normal range of sense perception. In this etheric region there flourish civilizations and cultures, and race of beings which are born into that world and die there. They are not excarnate humans. They have knowledge of our world and canons do penetrate it. Many dwellers on the astral plane are aware of the etheric worlds also, and have the power of visiting them. This ability, however, does not seem to be a common and natural endowment but belongs to persons of a certain degree of development, corresponding to those whom we here call adepts, or possessed of exceptional psychic powers of projection or clairvoyance. Anyone, in short, can function on any plane for which he is prepared, and astral vision and astral traveling is fairly common because of our interest in the after-death life, but the etheric regions have been little explored. Yet they are in many ways the most important of all, since they hold the key to all the phenomena of our earth life, and to the origin and history of our race. A humble beginning necessary. It is certain that exploration of the etheric regions has been greatly neglected even among Western occultists, probably for the reasons mentioned in the foregoing paragraph, and the whole subject is practically a sealed mystery to Western science. Although as has been said, it was found necessary to invent an ether as a universal medium, if action at a distance was to be made intelligible. The first task confronting us, then, in dealing with the phenomena of the disks, is to accustom ourselves to the concept of an etheric world and people, here among us and close at hand, and to learn all that has been learned and taught in the past concerning this world, not disdaining to start with A and B, but with D and D as perhaps not impossible goals. At this point it would be wise to combine the preceding charts with the cosmology of the Western mystery tradition, the Kabbalistry of life, for the sincere student. Thus you can see immediately the origin of flying saucers in relation to Western occult science. Crab. 4. Part of the purpose of this information booklet is to stimulate interest in the scientific problems involved. In spite of a policy of secrecy and an unofficial censorship, it is widely believed by this time that a number of ether ships of the disc type have landed in the United States, through accident of some kind. We have no reports that any of the dwarf occupants survived the landing, and we are told that the propulsion and control of these craft is very much of a puzzle to scientists who have inspected them. They are said to be without motors, propellers, or anything recognizable as a drive mechanism. This suggests, of course, some kind of magnetic propulsion. The performance of these craft, their extraordinary speed, power and maneuverability far outclasses anything our own engineers have been able to achieve. Any race or nation possessing such aircraft could easily attain dominance of the skies and of the world whenever they so desired. Thus, from both a practical and a theoretical standpoint, it is of supreme importance that their secret be attacked with every resource of present-day knowledge. Various articles have appeared giving elaborate descriptions of possible drives and controls used by the ether craft, but the absence of all such mechanism from the landed discs, if correctly reported, dispose of these conjectures. Nothing has been proposed so far which even begin to satisfy the observed facts, and it is the belief of this writer that principles are involved which are not yet known to contemporary science. Furthermore, it is likely to take an unusually enlightened and tolerant type of scientific mind to grasp these principles, even if and when they can be explicitly stated. It is a pity, for instance, that the energetic character of metal, or psychic action, telekinesis, so abundantly demonstrated cannot be allowed its place in the domain of modern physics. Telekinesis refers to the movement of objects without known contact or employment of any recognized force or energy. The literature is extensive, but those who are interested may consult the 6 closely printed pages in Nanda Fodor's Encyclopedia of Psychic Science, article on movement. Arthur's Press, London, 1933. Such energies will be recognized by the science of the future, but meanwhile any attempt to import such considerations even into our fast, developing super physics will meet with derision. In fact, only the free, lance physicist, owing no allegiance to anything except the search for truth and indifferent to attack, will dare to suggest agencies of a psychic or psychological order. It is in the hope of stimulating the interest of such free spirits in this critical problem of borderland research that we print the following paragraphs, admittedly tentative and suggestive only, contributed to this booklet by associates for whose mathematical and scientific attainments we have the highest respect. Memorandum concerning disc propulsion. Associate John A. Hilliard is a mechanical engineer living in St. Paul, Minnesota. He is also a student of metaphysics and head of a Rosicrucian group there. Mr. Lane characterized the second paragraph of Mr. Hilliard's memorandum as a brilliant tour de force which comes to close grips with the basic propulsion problem of the flying saucers. In order to get any comprehension of etheric physics, we have to get away from high school and first-year college physics. Perhaps an analogy useful in this matter would be the following: a piece of steel 1 foot long and, say, 1/4 inch in diameter, heated to 1000 degrees above normal, 70, will stretch about 0.00734 inch, which doesn't seem very much. But suppose it could be done 3 million times per second, and suppose there were some means of making the stretch, and, relax work the steel piece along in one direction, like the inkworm. At 3 million times or jumps per second at 1000 degrees changing temperature, that bar would move at the incredible speed of 1254.59 miles per hour. For us to do something like that with a piece of steel, we would have to alternately peg the ends so that the bar would move in one direction. But suppose we had a substance through which we could send a heat wave of 3 million cycles per second,